This is Smart Tech, episode 1623.
I'm dreaming of a tech Christmas. Our top 10 gift picks for the tech head in your life.
Tech Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells.
Hello, and welcome to one of my favorite episodes of the year, Stuff to Buy for Me. Well, actually, you should buy the stuff for your loved ones, but if you want to gift me something on Amazon, let's say, I wouldn't turn it down. Merry Christmas, everybody. I am your host, Chuck Minear, and today I want to share my top 10 technology gift picks for that someone special or yourself in your life. You know, one for me, one for you, one for me. Anyway, links to all of these choices and videos, etc., are available on our website, which is www.smarttech.tv. Smarttech.tv. Now, just a caveat, many of the links on our website are affiliate links. That means SmartTech gets a small finder's fee, which helps us stay on the air. If you're considering buying one of the items we discussed today, or if you buy through Amazon, going through our affiliate link from our website helps the program immensely. So I'm going to remind you, www.smarttech.tv, click on the item or click on our Amazon link, and we get a finder's fee. It does not cost you anything more, but it does support Smart Tech. So enough of the commercial. Let's get started. Now, I'm not going to count down these this year as I have these in no particular order, except the coolest one is last. Let's start with phones, as that is what probably will be given the most, at least it's on my list. If you're an Android user, and let's see, my first priority was phones that do not catch on fire. Or burn up your house, and I'm going to suggest the Pixel by Google. It is their newest phone. It is their only phone. And since Android is written by the Google team, it integrates probably the best into Android and to Google services of any phone. The nice thing about Google services is they are available to anybody who wants to use them by downloading an app on your phone. But when you buy the Pixel, kind of like buying an Apple and getting into their ecosystem, you're buying a Google phone and you're in the Android ecosystem. It's got the Google Assistant built in. So on the Apple side, you have Siri, and on Android side, you have Google Assistant. So you can ask her anything you want. And I think that the Google Assistant in Android works better in a lot of ways than Siri does. It's more robust. It lets you do a series of things together, whereas Siri lets you find maybe one thing in particular. The Google Assist will let you go through several steps at once. So the camera is awesome. It has an 89 on the DxO Mark Mobile score, which is a DxO gives scores to lenses and cameras across the board. It is the highest mark camera. Just know on mobile devices, as important as the quality of the camera and the megapixels is the software that goes with it. So you can't always tell by the specs, but it is a pretty impressive phone. One of the things, it's 12.3 megapixels, and the pixels are large. What happens is they cram these pixels into these really small chips, and the pixels become really small. So the larger the chip is, the bigger the pixels can be, and they each collect more light. So these are larger pixels on this chip, and it allows for more light collection, and allows for a 2.0 aperture, which, if you know anything about the wideness of lenses and how much light it allows to come in, is pretty good for low light purposes. So the other thing is Google allowing you to save all of your photos and videos from the device forever and ever and ever for free, at least until they change their mind. And so I use this service on my iPhone to save all of my pictures, but it's built into the phone. So whereas Apple lets you save all of your photos for a period of time, I think a year, and then it starts to delete those photos if you haven't backed them up or told it to save it. Google does not do that to you, and they will keep those photos forever and ever built into the system. They've also come up with a FaceTime alternative called Duo, which we talked about on a previous episode. In fact, that episode is 1620. So you can go to our website, smarttech.tv, and you can go to the archive section and click on 1620 if you want to find out more about the Pixel phone and some of the services in the Pixel phone. But Duo is like FaceTime on the Apple device. The nice thing about Duo is it's cross-platform. So you can install Duo on an iPhone, and you can talk to people like you do with FaceTime, but you can talk across platforms. So it's built into the phone, which makes it rather seamless. The negative to the Pixel is that it only comes in one size. So if the size, if you hold that size and you go, this is the size I want, it's great. If you want a bigger phone, a bigger screen, you're not going to get it in the Pixel, and you might want to go with something like the Samsung. Just be careful it doesn't explode in your pocket. All right. Now, if you're on the iOS side, well, you really only have one choice. But you know what? It's a good choice. The iPhone 7, which is my other phone pick, is a great, great phone. It's water resistant, splash resistant, so you can actually go swimming with the thing and it will not kill the phone like it would have in the old days. And the new finishes are really, really nice. If you're into the look of the phone, now the problem is we usually cover them up with some kind of case, but I'll tell you what, that jet black finish is really stunning. It's very, very beautiful. And Apple works really hard on the aesthetics, and it's great. The camera in it is almost as good megapixel-wise as the Google phone, but it's got things like optical image stabilization, and that means that it's not just doing stabilization through software, but it's actually got a gimbal built in to the phone, in micro gimbal. I mean, the thing is so small, but it actually physically stabilizes the lens, which gives you an even sharper picture. The front facing camera is 7 megapixels, so it's really fairly sharp for doing FaceTime and selfies, that kind of thing. And the True Tone flash on this is amazing. Now, what happens is, when you go into different lighting situations, you deal with different color temperatures. That means that sometimes the light is more yellow or it's more blue. And you would say that on a bright, sunny day, that would be kind of the normal light. Sunlight, day sunlight is what you're kind of aiming for. It looks the most natural to the eye. But when you go into like a room that's full of LEDs, some of the LEDs have a blue cast. They've taken care of some of that. But in the early days, especially, the LED lights were blue. The fluorescent lights were kind of yellow. And they would cast different colors depending on the temperature of the light. So what a True Tone flash does is it instantly reads the temperature of the room. And then it adjust the flash on the camera to compensate for that color so that you get a true color grade in the room. So, for example, if the light in the room is blue, more blue than it should be, the camera will flash at a little more yellow than normal, and it'll compensate and balance the light out so the light looks natural. So, as I said, it's not always the megapixels of the camera that make a difference. It's the other technology, including the software, and this is really a software-driven feature that make a difference. And so you get stunning photos from this phone. You really do. It also has two lenses on the 7 Plus, on the larger camera. And you're going, well, why would it have two lenses? Well, if you've got one lens and you want to zoom in on something, you're basically taking those pixels and blowing them up, making those pixels larger. And then what happens is it becomes more blurry. So with a really sharp, high pixel camera, you can zoom it a little bit and you don't even notice. But if you zoom it a lot, then it's all a digital zoom. It's just taking the information there and it's blowing it up, making it bigger. The solution that Apple came up with, because you can't really put a physical zoom on a phone because it's too thin. You need to, if you've ever seen a zoom lens, you know, they're kind of long. So what they decided to do was put two lenses on, take two pictures basically, and then you've got a close-up and a regular shot. And depending on how zoomed in you want to be, it picks either one. And now you're going to have a sharper, closer picture than you will on other phones. So that's really great. It's 25% brighter than the old phone. It's probably the most powerful phone on the market. The chips in it are the fastest, most powerful. So if you're going to do things like photographs, video on it, you're going to have probably the best luck with it because of just the speed. Apple has put a speaker on the top and the bottom. So if you turn the phone sideways and you watch a movie long ways, you're going to hear at least somewhat stereo. Although, you know, when you're talking about something that small, I don't know whether it makes that much difference, but it might. So Apple has stepped up their game. People complain because, you know, when Apple comes out with a phone, it looks a lot like the old phone. There's not a whole lot of big differences. Like Samsung comes up with, you know, things that look really different. But Apple is into incremental changes, making things better in steps. And they really have done. I think that the step between an iPhone 6 and an iPhone 7 is larger than you'd think by first look. The other nice thing about the iPhone 7, it does come in two sizes. So you can have a larger size or a smaller size, and it depends on what size of screen you like, unlike the Google phone. My next one refers back to episode 1619. You can go on and listen to that on our website. That is the Master Lock 4400 series of padlocks. It is a Bluetooth padlock. I've been using mine for a while on a shed in the backyard, and as long as I have my phone in my pocket, which I usually do, but not all the time. But I had the same problem with keys, right? If I walk up to that device, and I can unlock the padlock right away because I'm close to it. What happens is if I have it set on battery saver, so that means that I have to actually engage the app on the phone. So I just turn it on with the app, and then the lock just unlocks or actually turns green, and I can push the button and unlock it. So I really like those. It's been robust so far. I haven't had any problems with it, and I would recommend the 4400 series. Go listen to episode 1619. I give you a lot more information about it. In the episode right before that, I talked about the Tapiq. I really, really like the Tapiq. There's a lot of companies out there making wireless thermometers for barbecuing, for smoking. You can use it in your kitchen if you want to, but I really like the Tapiq. The Tapiq just works, and it works well. Some of the other ones that I've used that use Bluetooth technology, they use a little bit cheaper probes. I've just had trouble with, and I haven't had consistency. I have been using the Tapiq for months now, and I've used it quite a bit for smoking. It's got four inputs. One I use in, I have a smoker. I put it in the smoker to register the ambient temperature of the smoker. I put another one in, maybe if I have two different cuts of meat, I'll put them, put different probes in there. Or I just smoked a turkey for Thanksgiving, and I put one in the breast and one in the thigh, because you want to make sure that the temperatures are right in both of those areas. And that's one of the problems with cooking turkey, is sometimes when you cook one of those meats, the thigh actually cooks faster than the breast, and so you don't want to, you know, give people salmonella. So I use that. The TapQ kept me from giving my guests salmonella this year. So I would really recommend it. They have a new version out with a weather-tight case. There is talk of new software that will come out that will not require an internet connection. So it'll work a lot like the like a Bluetooth does. But also, if you have an internet connection, I have actually done this, had to run down to the store for some barbecue sauce or something. No, I make my own barbecue sauce. No, I don't. So I could check on the food while I was at the market, because it's all internet based. It's the best of both worlds. It's highly accurate. I've had no problems with reliability on this. You can keep a record of your cooks. When you're done, you can email it to yourself for free, or you can pay for a service that they have, which will save actually all of your smoke. So you can, you know, you can archive your settings and what you did. I've had great customer service with them, and it's family owned and run. I would recommend the TapQ. It's a little bit more pricey than some of the other ones, but I'll tell you what, so far it's been worth it. My next item, fitness bands are a big deal right now, and I would go with the Apple Watch. You know, there are cheaper ones, and if you just want to measure your pulse rate and your steps, you can obviously get cheaper ones than the Apple Watch. The Apple Watch just does a lot, and with its new software upgrade to Watch OS 2, it does a lot of things a lot better. I do things like monitor my doorbell with my Ring doorbell on my watch. It tells me if somebody's there. My TapQ has an app on my watch so that I can look at, you know, just flick my watch, my wrist up, and I can watch the temperature of what I'm cooking. It has become a device that when I got it, I wasn't sure about it. And now that I've been wearing it over a year, I use it every day. So with its new OS, I think the Apple Watch is still the classiest and best overall wearable on the market. It tracks fitness, keeps and makes appointments. I can see my emails. I can text. I can run third-party apps. I use it to monitor my TapQ, and I can just, you know, flick my wrist up and I can see what my temperatures are right away. It's a marvel. And it has the ability to easily change watch bands, which lets you make a fashion statement. Some of the third-party watch bands are really nice and a lot more reasonably priced than the Apple bands, although the Apple bands are great quality. But I'll tell you what, I've gotten some really nice bands on Amazon when I wait for a sale. I mean, they usually run around $30, but I've found some for as low as, you know, like $9-$10, just waiting for some things to go on sale. Now, Microsoft out-appled Apple. Apple came out with their new laptop. It's got this touch bar on the top. I haven't tried it yet. I'm a little bit like, I don't know about this. But I'll tell you what, Microsoft, a couple days before, came out with the Surface Studio. It is a 28-inch touchscreen Surface interface with a mechanism that allows the screen to adjust down like a drafting table. And so for an artist, graphic designer, photographer, video editor, this function is amazing. Basically, it sits up, looks a lot like an iMac when it sits up. It doesn't have the CPU in the screen like the iMac. It's got a base on the bottom, but, you know, that's fine. And then you can take this, and I think it's 22 degrees. You can tilt the screen forward and then lower it down, and it becomes like a drafting table surface. Now you've got, and it's a Surface computer, so it's completely touch screenable. And what really makes this is obviously two input devices that you don't always have on a regular computer. You pair it with a Surface Pen, and you can pair it with something called a Surface Dial. And the Surface Dial is this movable disc-shaped, like a knob. It's an input device, and it's the size of a knob, and you place it right on your screen. And then when you place it on your screen, the Surface knows it's on the screen, and that knob can be programmed to do all kinds of really neat things. I mean, it can make adjustments. If you're doing video editing, it could scrub for you the timeline. If you're drawing, maybe a color palette or a color wheel comes up, and you can just turn the knob and pick the colors you want. And that with the pen. So if you're right-handed, you might put the pen in your right hand and put the dial over on the left side with your left hand, and you can actually, you know, turn that dial, make adjustments while you're drawing with your right hand. It's pretty amazing. It's an interesting way of doing input. It's a new way of doing input, and the people who have used it have said they can't really take their hands off the machine because it just kind of engulfs you. So the pen rests in your hand comfortably for natural writing and erasing, and it features 1,024 levels of pressure sensitivity and a working eraser. And the dial, you can simply click and hold it to display a radial menu of tools. And it works with some of the professional things like Adobe Creative Cloud really well. Now, the price matches its innovation. The low end is $2,999, so $3,000 is entry level. $3,000, but it is made for a professional market, so a lot of businesses would be buying it. $3,000 is an 8-gigabyte model with a 1-terabyte hard drive and a i5 chip. So it's not a speed demon. And I would either say you spend the money and get the higher level, or you wait until generation 2 when they'll obviously up the speed. A terabyte drive, 8 gigabytes isn't really enough if you're doing Photoshop. You want 16. So that's a little bit of a problem. It's kind of an underpowered, but it's underpowered for what it's meant to do. Although the people who have used it have said that it's really nice. If you want a 32 gigabyte i7, which is the one I would recommend, you're going to pay $4,200. So it is a lot of money for this machine, but it's beautiful. And you know what? What's interesting? I realize that this is the first desktop hardware that Microsoft has ever made. In all these years, it makes the OS, it's made, the Surface and some laptop and tablet type devices. It has never, ever produced its own desktop unit. So this is Microsoft's first dive into it. And I'll tell you what, it's pretty, pretty nice. So let's bring it down to reality. I mean, we talked $4,200. Let's go back to a little bit more reasonable. Hey, you know what? Everybody runs out of power. If you're a geek and you're using technology, you're going to run out of power. And so I would really recommend a portable USB battery. They're not that expensive. I would recommend batteries from a company called Anker, A-N-K-E-R. You want to be a little bit careful because these are the same batteries that, you know, blew up in the Samsungs. But if they've got the right circuitry, they don't blow up. I mean, the same batteries are in all of our portable devices right now. It's a circuitry that keeps it from overheating. So I trust Anker. They've been around for a while. I've owned a couple of their products, and they work well, and they've got good reputations. They're, you know, 4 or 5 stars on Amazon. Basically, you look at the number, and the higher the number, the more it charges. So, for example, for $16 on Amazon right now, you can get the Astro E1. It's 52, 5,200 milliamps per hour, MAH, and that'll charge up a phone probably once, maybe twice. The next size up is $24 and it's 10,000 and it will do, you know, a phone several times or part of maybe an iPad Air. But if you go to around 20,000, you can charge up multiple things. So you just want to look at and see what the person charges up or whether they need a little boost or whether they want to be able to charge the whole thing up. For $40, the PowerCore 2100 is high speed output, so it charges things up fast and it'll charge up an iPad easily or a Galaxy. And so that's one I would recommend, but it just depends on the size they want. You can get really small ones. You can get medium sized ones. All the Anker ones though seem to be pretty slim for the size. So it's something you throw in your bag. You charge it up before you leave. You throw it in your bag. And then if you need more power at the last minute, you pull the thing out and it's just a USB plug on the end that allows you to do that. And they also have a flashlight in them. So that's kind of neat. Also by Anker is because we all have a lot of different devices, right, is a 5-port USB charger. These are multi-port chargers. They're about $24, $25. And this one I own. It charges 5 devices at one time. It does quick charging. It has 40 watts. So if you plug one unit in like an iPad, it charges it fairly quickly. But I have one by my bed for a while, or I would take on a trip. And I could plug in, you know, a Kindle, a camera, an iPad, an iPhone, and I still had one port left over. So it's a nice device to have. Instead of taking a brick with me, I just take this unit. It is not that much bigger, maybe twice as big as an Apple brick, a little wider, about twice the length. So it's not very big. And it allows me, it also makes friends at the airport, because if you're plugging into the wall there, you can let somebody else plug into your unit and everybody really likes you. And it's only $25, so it's a lot more reasonable than my $4,200 pick. All right. But let's get expensive again, because if you're looking for a tablet, hey, I really like the iPad Pro. I have a 9.7-inch iPad Pro, and it takes it up a level with the Apple Pencil. The Apple Pencil works really, really well on an iPad Pro. I use it in meetings. I'm not an artist, so I don't draw things with it, but people who do tell me it's pretty awesome. I use it to take notes. I'm a writer. I've tried taking things into meetings where I can type, but I really like taking an agenda and writing right on the agenda so that I know where it goes on the agenda. So what I do is I take my iPad in, I snap a picture of the agenda, pull it up into an app on the iPad, pull out my Apple Pen, Apple Pencil, and I write right on the unit. Then it automatically saves. So I don't lose my notes. I've got them in there. I save everything in Evernote. And it's been a good solution. I've tried other solutions in the past. I've tried other companies, pens on and pencils or whatever they are, on the iPad, and they've been clumsy at best. I've tried other companies, writing on special paper and all of that stuff, but this solution so far has worked pretty well for me. If I get the agenda via email, I just pull up the attachment and I write right on the attachment. If I if I don't have that electronically, I just shoot a picture of it with my iPad Pro. The screen is stunning. It's beautiful. It's bright. The battery life is really good. I like I have the cover that has a keyboard in it, and you know, it's not a full size keyboard, but it types pretty well for what it is. I like it. Okay. And I just had to get used to it. And if you want a larger size, the iPad Pro, the larger size, a 12-inch iPad Pro is beautiful. The nice thing about an iPad is, you know, unlike Windows 10, you get on a Surface. I mean, you do get everything built in the Surface, but the problem with the Surface is the problem with Windows. It's things crashing. It's the constant updates. It's the viruses that you get, and you just don't get those on the iPad. The iPad just seems to work, and it's very easy to recover, and it's very easy to troubleshoot. It is also limited, so you have certain limitations with the iPad, and that's what makes the iPad work so well if you stay within the limitations. So you have to decide for yourself, but I really like the iPad because when I go into meetings, when I do things with my technology, I need it to work. I need to be able to walk into a room, plug it in, and to have it go to a TV or whatever. And it just works. It works really easily. So I would recommend the iPad Pro, either size, whichever one you like. Go down to an Apple store, try it out. I'll tell you, that large one is so light, and it is so nice. And I got a case for mine. I use the front cover, the Apple cover, which has direct connection to the keyboard. It's not Bluetooth, which is nice. So that cover covers up the iPad, shuts it off automatically. And then I got one of those clear silicone cases. But what I like about it is on the side, it's got a little slot in it for an Apple Pencil. And so I haven't lost my Apple Pencil yet. I thought, you know, here's a $99 device that I'm going to buy that is going to get lost in 10 minutes because I lose pens and pencils so quickly. So the first thing I did was look on Amazon, and I'll put a link to it on the website, where I could snap this thing on the back and I would have the pencil with me. And so far, so good. It's a great, great idea, great device. So for my last pick of the year, I'll tell you what, I've wanted a drone. Yes, I wanted a drone. I'm a photographer. You know, I've taken pictures of everything from ground level my whole life. And I look at the stunning photos taken from drones, and the artistic work, it's really the next level up. And there's lots of drones out there. There's drones from, you know, $30 with a little camera on it, all the way up to multiple thousands of dollars. There's professional drones now that are used in cinematography. And I think all of them are pretty cool. And the problem with the drone is crashing it, right? Well, DJI, which is one of the innovators of drone technology, they make probably the best professional drone right now. I think that's about a $3,000 drone, has come out with a new device called the Mavic Pro. Now, they've had other devices. They're really good drones. Start at about $400, and they go up to about, as I said before, a little over $3,000. The Mavic Pro is smaller. It folds up into a small device. You can stick it in a backpack really easily. It does some things that I think are great for someone like me who would tend to crash the thing, right? First of all, it has a flight time of 27 minutes. It will fly as far as 7 kilometers. That's about 4 miles. Legally, you're supposed to keep it within sight, but you can fly up to 4 miles, you know, direct. It'll go up to 65 kilometers an hour. So it'll fly fast if you want it to. It has a 3-axis gimbal, so the camera sits in a gimbal, and the gimbal moves as the drone moves, and so it gives you a really smooth picture. The camera that it has on it is a 4K camera, so it's very, very high video. And you might not output your video at that, but you always want to capture your video at the highest level you can, because you can always downgrade video. You just can't upgrade it very well, right? When you try to upgrade a 1080p video to 4K, you're going to get a lot of noise and a lot of, it's just not going to look right, okay? So you want to try to do that. And it has a 12 megapixel camera built on board. So the same as the iPhone 7, the same as the Google Pixel. It's 12 megapixels. It's really good for most photography. The thing about the Mavic Pro is it does things like it remembers where it took off. So if it loses connection with the base, it can fly back exactly to where it left off. It uses GPS, so it's sophisticated that way. If it's flying forward and you're telling it to fly forward and there's something in the way, it will automatically move out of the way instead of smashing up and ruining your whole investment. It'll move out of the way. It's got avoidance on it, which for me is the big deal. It's huge, as the president-elect would say. It's huge. The photos on it are just amazing. And I'll put a video on our website, smarttech.tv, so you can see what it looks like. The Mavic Pro is not cheap. It is $999, but I'll tell you what, it's sold out right now. You have to wait until January to get one. Now, they've got other versions, DJI does, and they're good drones. The problem is that they're not nearly as automatic and friendly as this one, and they're bigger. The thing about using drones is you want the drone to be smaller and unobtrusive. You don't want it to stand out. And some of the other drones that take really good pictures and have a good gimbal on them, are larger. So they've really taken the technology, shrunken it down to something that you can hold in your hand. When you fold in the props on this, it fits in the palm of your hand. It's a little longer it's over the side of the palm of your hand on each side, but it still fits in your hand. So it's really a great device. And of all the drones out there, I think this one is cutting edge, and it has a lot of the features of their $3,000 drone, or their $1,500 drone. They've taken it and they put into the new model of their $999 drone. As I said, you can find drones in all kinds of shapes and sizes. And you also want to make sure that you follow the law. There are some new laws out, and we talk about them in episode 1601. It was the first episode of this year, and it's called "And the Government Drones On." So it's about the government. And so that episode will talk about registering your drone, getting a license, and some other things about drone use. But that's on our website in the archive section, 1601. But the Mavic Pro is cool. It's neat. And you do get what you pay for. You got to, if you want something that's going to, what I look at is if I bought a $300 drone without some of this collision avoidance stuff, I'd probably smash it up in the first, because I really don't know how to fly a drone very well. So I have to learn. So something that's got some built-in safeguards so that it doesn't crash itself, is probably in the long run going to save me money than just paying some money right out front. That's how I look at it. So drone on, folks. So there's my list, my 10 things. I'm sorry I didn't have too many really cheap ones this year, but the Bluetooth padlock is a decent price. It's around $60. And then you have the battery and the charger, which, not really, romantic, but really, really useful. Something that someone will use every single day. So once again, I want to wish everyone listening a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, whatever holiday that you're celebrating this year. And until next time, this is your host, Chuck Minear, hoping that this episode has made you just a little bit smarter about tech.
May your days be merry and bright, and may all your
us be wise.